Well, 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 well. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good middle of the night to you and all that kind of stuff. It is Thursday, May the 30th. Look at that. Thursday. Hooray, hooray, the end of May. Not quite, eh? How fast it's all gone. You're listening to Paul English Live here on WBN 324. We're here with you for the next couple of hours. Welcome to the show. Hi, good evening and welcome everybody to the show. I just thought I'd play a little bit of music a bit longer there. We've just had our music redone and I was just loving it. And hooray, hooray, the end of May, nearly. Possibly not. How about that? But it's nearly June. It's nearly June, isn't it? See, I know what months come in what order. And as I was saying to myself earlier on, as I was listening to the music, we're going to have a nice messy show tonight as usual, or this afternoon, depending on where you are. You're listening to Paul English Live here on WBN 324. Good to be with you. I'm joined by Paul B. Paul, are you here this evening and sitting in the brand new studio that I just built 15 minutes ago? Probably not. No, it's not. See, you couldn't even get 15 in.
15 minutes ago, yeah. Don't you love it?
Yeah, it's good.
No, I could get in just fine. You had me muted before.
Yeah, I did. Well, that's it. You know, new stuff and all that kind of stuff. So there's always something going on here technically because, you know, I think when you get involved in technology and stuff, there always is, right? So the regular studio that we use, it's no more. It's shuffled off this mortal coil and gone to meet its maker. No, it was a great service, but I just couldn't sustain it for fiscal reasons, let's put it that way. And it was a little bit overkill for just one show a week. We didn't really need all that stuff at the moment. Who knows? We might get it back a little bit later on when I win the lottery or whatever. No, it wasn't that excessive, but we had other solutions. Anyway, I thought today was the last day of it. We thought today was the last day of using that studio, and it was. And I thought that might mean up until midnight, but it didn't. It was working this afternoon, but when I just came to set everything up about 40 minutes ago, there it wasn't. It had gone. So we've moved into new offices, haven't we, Paul? And they're very nice, aren't they? Quite smart and clean. Bit Spartan, but they're not too bad.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
No, I like what you've done to the place.
It's easy to get around, isn't it? There's less stuff in here, so it's probably all for the best. It really is. So I always have one of these little
there isn't all those cubicles. There isn't all those cubicles to trip over. I mean, no. You got to hate that.
You do. You do. Absolutely. You've got to hate it.
Actually, I'm thinking I might have to switch my connection. There's too much delay between you and me. I can't go through three different computers. So I'm going to be switching my connection while you take the show.
Are you leaving me? Are you off already? You hate the place, don't you?
I'll be in and out, but I'll try to do it.
You've had enough. You've had enough. That's okay. I'll see you on your return.
Well, it's like we've got a two or three... It's like we got a 2 or 3 second delay between us. I mean, I'm going through three different video conferencing programs just to get to you, and two different virtual private networks. It's just too much. It's too much. I just
go on. Off you go. Come back, nice and simple. I'm sure you will. It's okay. That's cool. Are you leaving? Are you leaving already? I've wrecked it already. Are you off? But wow. Next time I'll have to build a proper studio. I think it looks great. So anyway, look, our technical rummaging around. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Funny sort of week. Wonderfully grisly weather here in England. For those of you that want to know about the English weather, I'm sure that's practically no one. It's grey, it's dark, it's windy, and it's rainy. It's like November, but slightly warmer. But that's really what it's been like today. It's been quite a challenge. So that's been going on. And if you've just been... I'll wait till Paul comes in, because he doesn't even know really where we're going to take the show tonight. Neither do I. No, I was just tuning in there and listening to the remnant or the tail end of the Alex Jones show, which has just been on WBN for the last couple of hours. I don't catch that every day. The man with the extremely gravelly and loud voice. How does he do that? He's been doing that for, what, 20-odd years now? I don't know what he takes. Must be eating a lot of cabbage or something to get all that kind of stuff going. But he just had a chap on called Brian London. Are you back, Paul? Are you with us? Are you hearing me now? No.
No, not yet.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Not yet. I'm still working out how to
do it. All right, that's cool. Anyway, so... yeah, we're going to have a little group ensemble piece tonight. And just going back to that thing, he had a chap on called Brian London. I don't know if he caught it. I did. I caught a little bit of it. So Brian London is the head guy of London Reel at londonreel.tv, which became pretty famous a few years back amongst all sorts of people, I guess, because he did a series of interviews with David Icke. now, back in the 90s, I did read a couple of David Icke's books. What was the first one? Robots Rebellion, wasn't it? It's the first one that I was made aware of, about 95, 96. A lot of fun, a lot of good stuff. At the time, I was getting a lot of information from other people at the same time. But, of course, David Icke has carried on. And I know a few people who know him a lot, lot better. I've never met the guy, even though he's not a million miles from me. I'm on the south coast here. And he's over at the Isle of Wight, I think, which I can see on a good morning with the nice, clear blue sky, something that we don't get that often these days. As I said, it's been very cloudy and grisly here today, so we didn't get too much of that. But yes, he started off back then, and he did a series of interviews, or Brian Rose interviewed him a few years back. You might be familiar with them, and they took off. What Brian Rose was just talking about is the fact that he lost his channel on YouTube with millions of subscribers, and I'm sure many of you out there that have set up your own YouTube channels, and probably that's quite a lot of you, because certainly a lot of people have set up YouTube channels, and why not, will be familiar with that process of building up an audience and then having them take the rug out from underneath your feet and losing it. And of course, that's on a certain scale. The scale that happened to Mr. Rose, and I don't know the guy, but was considerable. And this is because that interview that Icke did was deemed to have hit a lot of buttons and they didn't like it. I'm always slightly suspicious even about that, but that's just me. You're going to have to forgive me. I'm sort of don't trust no one, not never, not nobody, when it comes to this stuff, because there's games within games within games, don't you think? I think there are. Nevertheless, they did manage to hit a massive audience with that kind of stuff. And I've been thinking about audiences, and that's you lot out there. And I was talking to someone the other day who was taking me through certain processes, and also with other people that I speak to. Here we are doing a radio gig, We're going out over Rumble. Our main channel, of course, is WBN 324. So we don't have any direct interaction, I guess, with the bulk of the listeners on WBN 324 because most of the ones I see, of course, are in the Rumble chat connected to this show. That's where I'm seeing things. This show, of course, is not as big as Alex Jones or probably any of the other shows. Not yet, possibly. We will see. But it's a bit tricky at times. For me, being an Englishman, a long, long way, and knowing that the bulk of the listener base is probably in the States, even though we've got Paul along here to sort of help out, it's difficult sometimes to read exactly whether what we're saying actually is making too much sense or not. I've tended here not to really follow much of the current news stories of the day, although there are a few that are worth mentioning. We'll probably touch on a few tonight, not least of which is the hilarious election cycle and election dates that are coming through here in the UK and in the US. And I see that Paul's sort of reappeared in icon form only. Paul, yeah. Hi, welcome back. Are you happy now?
Patrick is the one that keeps dropping in and out.
Well, he's just had enough of listening to me. I think he's in some place throttling a pig or something like that. I don't mean that as a euphemism. I mean it literally, everybody, because he does that sort of thing. Somebody's got to deal with these pigs, you know, and stuff like that. So Patrick's one of those chaps that does that from time to time. But he did say he's going to be connected. Yeah, he'll be connected into the room, but he may join us after about an hour or so. And some good. I was just talking about Brian Rose here and Billy Silver. I agree. Although I shouldn't say this, maybe I'm running counter to the previous show. So if you've just come in, you listen to Paul English Live here on WBN, and I was just passing comments about the Alex Jones show that's just been on for the previous 2 hours, which I'm going to tune into, I guess, every week. It's good, you know, because it gives us a lead into what maybe we're going to talk about here. But Billy Silver has said, Brian Rose evokes extreme dodginess. Yes, I think everything must be taken with a pinch of salt. I tend to think, Billy, that wherever we see people, and there's always some kind of a pitch for your financial independence is just around the corner, it does kind of make my toes curl. And it makes them curl personally because in my earlier days, in my 20s and 30s, I was connected on multiple occasions with people like that. It's not to say, I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but it's certainly a world that I'm not suited for at all. And it creates a kind of an oddness, I think, in your world outlook when you're looking at those sorts of things. But irrespective of that, what they were talking about just then I thought was pretty cool, because they were talking about the fact that he lost his YouTube channels, and I believe they've got some premiere coming out today in an hour. Well, not an hour, less than an hour, about 45 minutes, 4 p.m. Eastern, I think it is. So that's 9 p.m. here in the UK. So I'm sending you all away to go watch this, which is extremely stupid. On X, you might have heard of X. It used to be called Twitter. It's now called X. Mm-hmm. It's a rather ambivalent platform, don't you think? Paul, what do you think about X and Twitter? What's your view of it? Familiar with it?
I can neither confirm nor deny X's validity. I don't even know why they just didn't leave it Twitter. I mean, how many things are associated with the X? And I realize it's a little early in the program to like get on a soapbox, so I'm not going to do that. But I am going to put one foot up on it. They talk about the X being a slanted cross, and if you're signing by the X, you're actually spelling and all this. There's way too much crazy stuff associated with that. Why would Elon Musk, who appears to be a pretty good guy, mm-hmm. why would he rename the whole thing to X? I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Can we get him on? Anybody out there can get Elon Musk on this show. Elon. Yeah.
Talk to your publicist.
Just get on this show, right, with this English bloke. What do you call it, X, then? So, I don't know. He's six of one and half a dozen of the other. You don't know what to make? I don't know what to make of it. I mean, they were just talking then Jones and Brian Rose, that Rose was saying that X, he thought, was the last platform of real, true free speech. I don't know. Many people claim this all the time. You know, there's always some sort of dodgy deal or some dodgy backdoor software nonsense going on. And Musk is very difficult to read. I mean, everybody was in love with his electric cars 5 years ago. Everybody now views electric cars rightfully as a joke, which that, you know, that, well, I do. I view them as a joke, in my humble opinion. What's your view of electric cars, Paul? Do you love them? Do you want one? Do you want two?
I want electric cars with batteries that don't destroy the planet or abuse little children by locking them in lithium mines until they come out with 40 pounds worth or whatever. It's just ridiculous.
They're
poisoning the planet with the lithium batteries, and it's not necessary because there are other technologies that they could use.
You're right. They're not really electric cars, are they? They're really, the better word for them would be battery cars. They're battery cars. They run on batteries. And the battery technology is a joke. I mean, it's a devastatingly bad joke. I think we've mentioned it here before. Those of you who've got electric cars, sorry, but you're driving around a potential massive cobalt bomb. Do you think they tell them that when they buy them?
Yeah, if you have an electric car, you'd better have a nice long driveway and park it out at the end by the road, because if that sucker's in your garage, it's going to burn your house down one of these days.
I think so. Oh, we're full of cheery good news for the electric car industry here. I wonder if we'll get any ads being run on this show from them. Look, this is right. Let's really go into the doom porn thing, right? Big time, styly, as someone once said. Not me. I don't use that sort of language. If you happen to have a small tactical nuclear missile, anybody out there, if you just happen to have one, and I guess somebody must happen to have one, right? I haven't got one. And you let it off next to an electric car, it goes off. It's just one of these small ones that takes buildings down. They're not too dangerous, and you just kill a few thousand people. But if you stick it next to one of these cars and you blow the battery up with an atomic a nuke, it produces this thing called cobalt 60. It's some number after it. It's one of the deadliest particles in existence, and it would wipe out three or four city blocks in a couple of hours, which is a lot of people. That's just one car. So when I found that out, I thought, oh, these things are basically mobile targets. So that you could, any country that's running electric cars, you can easily threaten it, can't you? Everything's just open. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, forgive me. Yeah, I've just got this way of looking at things, which is awfully cheery, but that is what they're doing. But anyway, X, his other pet project, we'll have to see. I've heard that what they're doing on X now, or what they're about to do, not that I follow it. I've got an X account. Okay, so there is one. There's not many followers, although I've got some really favorable messages in recently. And there's no wonder why there's not many followers. I don't do too much on it. I actually had the account for about 8 or 9 years, didn't put a post up. I just thought I better get one. Why? I don't know. And just finding time to actually post things. But some pretty favorable comments recently. But that platform is, it's difficult to read. I know they do. I mean, maybe we should start streaming the show on it. Maybe I should start doing this because it's got streaming apparatus. You can put a stream in there. But I think what they're going to do, Paul, I don't know if you've seen this. They've started talking about this. They want you to start submitting personal details or something. Here it comes, right?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, the whole thing is all of the chicanery that they're planning on pulling is hidden in the terms of service all of the different platforms that you connect to, your email server, your YouTube channel, your Rumble channel, all of the stuff that you use, even though it is, okay, I'm doing air quotes here, that it is free, it's a free service. Trust me, the only free ride is the rotation of the Earth, and the flat earthers screwed that up. That's just the way it is. You know, you're not getting nothing for free. They're going to have your details. They're going to sell your name to make a profit on the back end. And they're going to lock you into adhesion contracts that that you have absolutely no idea what the depth and breadth are. None whatsoever. So I'm not about any of it. I think it's all just a load of bollocks, and we'll just go on our own merry way.
Well, I think it is a load of bollocks. I think we're allowed to say that at 3:30 in the afternoon, aren't we? We're allowed to say that. We just said it.
I got to get my feet off that soapbox. I almost had 2 feet on it that time.
No, this is good. And you just got a bit louder. You look to me a little bit quiet in the mix, so you can give yourself a bit more volume if you want to, unless I'm too loud. I don't think I am. I'm pretty loud. I'm looking at it. Maybe I'm too loud.
Okay, I'm going through Zoom. What I did was I eliminated one of the relaying softwares, and I went in right through Zoom so I wouldn't interfere with with your studio, you know, disconnecting and reconnecting. So I do have a couple of channels that I can pump up a little bit, but
that's all right.
I'm looking at my stream audio, and I can tickle the red if I raise my voice. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I some good comments in the chat. If you want to know where the chat is, head on over to Rumble, by the way. This show's running as a radio show over the Rumble video platform on Paul English Live. That's the channel, so you'd find it if you do a search. You should find it anyway. But comments here about Musk there to dupe people. I think there's definitely something in that. I mean, I used to work with a guy. Unfortunately, he shuffled off this model coil about 2 years ago. It will be 2 years this September. I'm still cross about it. I'm cross with him for doing that. He wasn't that old, and he kind of worked himself into a terrible physical state by working too hard, sort of ridiculous hours. He had connections, though, into Musk's SpaceX program. He was involved with cryptography, which I've always been slightly interested in. I'm not a cryptographer, but, you know, the whole idea of creating this, hopefully, protected space where you can encrypt things and you're nice and safe now. Of course, it's all sort of, you know, six of one and half a dozen of the other. But he had a couple of guys working for him on the cryptography side who had been working on Musk's SpaceX. They were responsible between the two of them for something like 3 million lines of codes. That's quite a bit, isn't it? A bit more than me cocking it up with the technical things here, you know. So, he did a lot of, he used to feed me information about what was going on there. I don't think he kind of could figure him out either. We didn't quite know. I mean, you know, when he brought out the satellite, all that internet stuff with a dish. Is it a dish that you stick in your garden? All that kind of stuff anywhere?
Yeah, Starlink.
Starlink, that's it. And I'm assuming that maybe more and more of these Starlink things are going up. I was supposed to get one, but this guy unfortunately shuffled off this model coil before the equipment turned up. So it was a bit of a sort of sad end to a lot of really good ideas. But, you know, things like that do happen, unfortunately, in life and death, I guess. Someone's written in here that Rents did an interview about it's Cobalt 60. Is that the number I was searching for? Brilliant. Thank you. And you know, we can all sign up and be Paul English. Yes, you can, XO. Yeah, do that. I think he means on Twitter. But yeah, Cobalt 60 was I think that's the number, Paul, that I was talking about. This really deadly type of cobalt. Very, very bad. You don't want any of that. Very, very bad indeed. So it's either true or it's not true. But as we've said before, you know, even just getting these stories out, getting us all concerned and anxious, does a great deal for them on the other side that are putting the stories out. So I don't know how Brian Rose's show is going to go today on Twitter, or X, as it is now called, but he's talking about the recovery. Anyway, it got me thinking about, you know, what we do here, and I know I talk to you about this, don't I, privately, bore you to death with it, no doubt, and I try to spend quite a bit of time thinking about this, you know, about what we are or what we can or what we could do with regards to all of this. And here we are, putting on a kind of boutique show. I'm just going to use that word because it's nice. It looks as though it's special and everything. I mean, some people might call it something else, but I'm going to call it that for now. We put on this show to a select audience here, certainly online, and a larger audience on WBN, for which I'm incredibly thankful and grateful, even though I don't quite know how I'm coming across. I'm just assuming it might not be too bad. It might not be too bad because I'm still here. And yet there's so many more people to reach. And I keep thinking, well, you know, I've got a YouTube channel, but I don't use it for the simple reason that, not that I think this show has talked about highly contentious things necessarily. I mean, maybe we have. And I'm very conscious about not doing that. I actually can talk about those things as people who may have known me or known of what I've said in the years. I can do all that kind of stuff. But my question has often been, why would I do it? It's certainly getting to that point. I mean, when you're young, you do it. You want to go into the real nitty-gritty of things because certainly for me, I don't know what it's like for you, Paul, but discovering hitherto hidden information is an electrifying experience. I mean, it's almost addictive in it because each subsequent bit of information you find kind of validates to a great degree, not always, but, you know, where you've come from and that kind of process. And I'm assuming for you, it must be a similar kind of experience, and maybe for most of the listeners here, certainly, you know, those that are reading and doing things, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did a number of, I spent my time investigating and inventing things myself. And that was where I got my enjoyment. I really wasn't interested too much in what other people were discovering or inventing.
Yeah.
I figured that it would be a better use of my time and mental acuity to exercise my own neurons and conceptual ideas than to just like pour through volumes and volumes and volumes of dry, boring junk. And I didn't want to do that.
No,
but
I got to
still it past the time.
And we're here on WBN hoping that you are enjoyably passing your time as we sit and grind our teeth. That's all this is about. We're just passing the time as we look at the clock before the Titanic runs into the iceberg. And we're all on it, by the way. So he said cheerily, possibly not. No, possibly not. I'm just coming back to this sort of Rose Jones conversation that I won't stick on it forever for the whole show, but I think the film he's come out with is a sort of, maybe it's an expose of the way that they lost their free speech with this platform, which is, I do find that interesting from a pragmatic point of view about how we can get around these things. And I've mentioned here before in the past, certainly in the UK, and there'll be similar sort of structures laid on the ground in North America, in the States and Canada, I guess. Although it's difficult to know quite what to make of Canada, what with that character, Justin Trudeau, running around dressed up as a woman or whatever he does. But we have parishes over here. You've probably heard me drone on about it before, Paul, but there's about 10,000 parishes. They're the old footprint on the land of where churches were, you know. Every church would have a parish of congregants, and so there's about 10,000. I keep thinking it might be useful if every single one of them had its own little parish radio network, you know, to connect at a local level, because the more I think about local politics or local work, it seems to me to be a very healthy and positive avenue down which to move and to really consider these things. Because every time we talk about the big stuff, even though you and I and many others do understand a great deal of it, probably more than normal people who don't spend too much time looking at it, I'm not bragging, I just think it's likely to be the case given how much time we've spent looking at all these things. I never know quite how we're supposed to deal with it. I don't have that. I can't snap my fingers like in Bewitched or whatever, or wriggle my nose and just change it, which is really quite irritating. I don't know if you've got any sort of superpowers like that to sort of change things quickly.
No, well, no, but actually, if I did have superpowers like that, what I would do is I would unwind the national and the global news and things, and I would shift a focus more toward like the smoke, the local and the small town regional area broadcast services, where most, if not all, of the broadcast day is of information of immediate use and value to the people that actually live in the area. Because mm-hmm. we've gone to decentralized global news, we're spending a lot of time listening to stories about things that may indirectly affect us at one time or another, but they're not immediate issues that we need to be concerned about.
mm-hmm.
okay, where the local, the small low power radio stations and the local newspapers, I mean, those were really the fundamental core of service to the public. And they did it area by area. Sure, mm-hmm. there were national publications, there were national services, but by and large, most of your news came from either over the picket fence or from the Sunday Bugler or whatever.
Yep.
You know? That I think we need to get back to that.
Well, I think we do. I mean, I understand why we've moved away from it, because this toy, this internet toy, this great seductive thing, you know, is probably... I mean, I've loved it. I love the fact that it turned up when it did in my life when I was in my early 30s. And I've just spent the last 30 years, you know, consuming as much wayward information, let's call it that, and trying to get to the bottom of things. And I'm not alone. There's hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have been using it for that, which is what I really think it's for. But the whole of the like local life, I've mentioned here before, I meet up with a group of people every couple of weeks, and it's a joy, actually. The other night, this Tuesday just gone, it was wackily different for reasons which I don't think anybody could explain, but it just felt different. And I thought, I remember being a teenager, you know, in your 20s, you're out practically certainly in England, I was out practically every night of the week at the pub, not drinking every night, because I didn't have enough money to buy beer every night. You know, you're always on the couch. Don't you owe me some money for that beer from last week? That was a regular conversation I used to have when I was like that. But you'd be out every night connecting with people face to face. And I realize I've become habituated to not doing that so much. Although when I go out shopping, awfully exciting, isn't it, my life? When I go to the shops, you see, Paul, I do seek to engage with anybody and everybody I meet on the footpath, you know, walk into the shop, anything. I'll pass remarks to try and just get people going. And it's that this incremental sort of centralized, globalized, electronic control, entertainment information system, we've reduced probably the amount of minutes we spend each day doing those sorts of things, which is where that kind of connective local glue used to come from. And it's why I keep thinking that certainly. I should, you know, yeah, really, and to try and think of it in terms of local things. There was a comment here, I'm just looking at the chat, from Vin Landerson. And he's addressing this to me. He says, your first shows, you stated that you were going to keep hammering away at money, the money power, central banking, etc., one way or another. It was, is a great idea. It's just an idea, and I will not stop doing that, Vin Landerson. I will keep doing that. We'll probably get around to money at some point. I just sometimes feel if I bang on about it every single week, people are going to get exhausted. But tapping it into the local thing, local currencies could be an answer, but we need projects to get engaged with, because otherwise we're just sat waiting for the big central power, you know, to kick us into touch. And I mean, I'm still interested at the highest level. It's got to be changed. I still don't see, I mean, I want to do things at a local level and would, but to get the attention of normal people, I mean, you can't talk to people about structures of banking systems. It's not possible. I mean, it is, but we certainly don't have enough time. We haven't got enough lifetimes to do it and reach the sufficient number of people that we need to get going. I mean, down the road from here, I don't know if you've got it where you are. How far are you from Ithaca? Is it upstate New York, Ithaca, Paul?
Yeah, kind of. I'm about an hour north and west of Syracuse. That's basically the biggest area,
right?
I'm 4.5 hours east of Buffalo, so I get a lot of their lake effect snow.
Right. I mean, I wish I knew. I wish I could picture what you're talking about. I can't. I can't. I'm just going to have to get a map, really, of where you, so that we can talk geography every now and again, which, of course, everybody would love. But I thought Ithaca was upstate New York or something. Have I got that right or wrong? I don't know where it is. Have I got my states wrong?
I'm not a native New Yorker.
Well, anyway, it's not really my main point. Are. Okay. You're terrible, you. I mean, this is just, you're supposed to make some great connective yeah. comment and go, oh, yeah, I used to go there all the time as a kid. But there's none of that, is there? So, well, they had a thing. They formed, it might still be running. I mean, I hope it is. They formed a local currency called the Ithaca Hour. Ithaca Hours. And you earned and spent Ithaca Hours as a local currency. And, of course, the great stumbling point or the challenge point is where, because people, we are all conditioned and trained to use government-issued fiat money, you know, pounds or dollars or euros, and so be it. And if we had benign governments in charge, honestly, I wouldn't mind. That's a funny sentence, benign governments. I just thought I'd say it again just to see how daft it sounds, because it really does sound daft. But it's the exchange between a local currency and the national currency that everybody's interested in. How much is that worth in dollars? How much is that worth in pounds? You know, how much is this, that, and the other? And it's building up a sort of a strange confidence with it. I mean, anyway, I think it's still going. It's very successful, Ithaca Hours, and I haven't had a chance to search it, but if anybody's out there listening and does do a search, you might find I-T-H-A-C-A, Ithaca. I forgot, and it's been going donkey's years. There was also a massive local exchange currency system in, I think it was called Blue Mountain, in Australia. They had, when I say massive, I'm speaking in relative terms. It's absolutely tiny, really, but they had about 5,000 or 6,000 people involved in this local currency thing. We also had a LETS system down here on the South Coast. LETS is short for Local Exchange Trading Systems, and it's where you design and build your own money. Interested? Want to run your own bank? Do. Get on with it. Get on with it, right? And they had a lot going. That would be down at Lewis, I think, which you may not have heard of. L-E-W-E-S. It's spelt wrong, but it's pronounced Lewis. Really sort of an old East Sussex town. It's wonderful, actually. And they had a big sort of exchange. They had about 500 or 600. That is big for these things, because most people are bamboozled, you know, by what they are. But they can and have invigorated local economies. But then, like I've mentioned here before, you know, when we've talked about the great story of Virgil in Austria in the early 1930s, it was such a spectacular success that when rolled out to the country would have been an even bigger success, that the international banking mobsters basically threatened the government of Austria with complete economic disaster, because they would have collapsed their currency on the international exchanges. That's how they do it, if they went ahead with this, because they don't like that kind of stuff. So it's, I think the problem's understood. And if you don't understand it today, don't worry. If you just hang around here, you'll understand. The problem is that, in simple terms, central banks are not our friends, because they're privately owned clubs. And they control all governments because they do. Because governments are always banging on about money, and most of the people in government don't even understand how it works. So they control the governments, and getting them to stop doing that, it's not that we haven't seen examples of it, but no one has succeeded in a permanent way. And I don't know what the solution to it is. I mean, maybe, Paul, or maybe it's a massive education program that is required. And you go, well, from children upwards? Very difficult. Gosh, I'll tell you, it's boring. Gosh, it's dull. Mm-hmm. It's so dull. That's his great power. People just start, oh, don't talk about it anymore. I've got to have a beer. I'm kind of with him. Yeah, absolutely.
I want my mommy.
Stop it. You did that too well. That was very bad. That was a bit too much. You nearly had me going then. That's terrible. So,
Ithaca, New York is as far south and west of Syracuse as I am north and east of it. You basically draw a line through the state.
Wow.
And Syracuse would be in the middle. Ithaca is, it's closer to Buffalo. It's only 3 hours from Buffalo. I'm 4.5. And,
okay.
It's down south of Syracuse. But, yeah, I heard about the Ithaca dollars, and they were essentially like a tie sticks, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you want tally sticks.
Tally sticks.
Yeah.
Tie sticks would be really fun right now, but tally sticks is,
I don't know what a tie stick is, but I'm kind of on for one. If you've got one there, I'll take one off your hands. Yeah, they seem pretty cool. Maybe that's what Thai people use to eat food. They don't have chopsticks. They have tie sticks or something to eat their food. I don't know, Paul. That's quite good.
I don't know.
The tally sticks were brilliant. Tally, anybody know what a tally stick is? I mean, just to let you know, I think certainly when I was young, up north, where I was from, in the northern part of England, there were still doorstop moneylenders. By golly, there were. My mum always used to send them away. We didn't need their services, but poor families, unfortunately, would fall into this pit. These were rapacious usurers, right? Other working class people who didn't have much compunction about the welfare of their kith and kin and preyed upon them. It was like an extension of rag and bone men. I don't know if you have them over there, but the rag and bone men used to be a guy. They may still exist, but I would imagine they're sort of like some strange throwback. They'd be the subject of some odd documentary, you know. But a rag and bone man, guy with a horse and a cart, and they would come around and pick up your rubbish, old beds and stuff like that, and take them to the scrapyard and get paid for scrap metal and things. Not a particularly lucrative living. Many of those also became doorstop moneylenders, and they were known as tallymen. Named after tally sticks, which was this very efficient way of actually measuring taxation back in the, when is it, 12, 1300s? They actually lasted for years. They're still, I think, somewhere in the Tower of London, in what's left of Londonistan. There probably are some tally sticks floating around that you can go and have a look at as curios. And I've forgotten the wood they were made from, but they would drill holes in them down the middle to determine the amount of money, and then it would be split right down the middle. You'd keep one, like one half of the receipt. The tax man, or whatever his name was, I don't know whether he was literally called the tax man, would take the other half, and then they would match them up to make sure that everything was accurate. I've told that terribly, but it was a measuring system that was proven and lasted for a long time. It was the, you know, accounting technology of its day. Large bits of wood. I suppose if you lost your temper, you could always hit the taxman over the head with your with the bit of tally stick that you had. No doubt that probably happened from time to time. But yeah, all these sort of these local currency or currency systems that people have created that work have, of course, as we all know, been overwhelmed by central banking. And speaking of governments and banking and all that kind of stuff and freedom of speech and technology and how we're going to get these incredibly important messages through to everybody by tomorrow morning. You guys have got a US election coming up, don't you? A politics thing.
November 5th.
So
that's coming up.
Yeah, there's something really curious going on. I don't know if we've discussed it before, but over here, we've got one as well. Isn't that fun? Right, so we've got one too. So the date that they've set for this one is July, the 4th of July in the UK.
Our Independence Day.
Wow.
But our election of November 5th is your what day?
Guy Fawkes Day. November the 5th is known as Bonfire Night, B-O-N-F-I, although when you're young you say bonfire because you think it's got something to do with bombs, but it doesn't. Actually, it does. It does have something to do with bombs. It's got a lot to do with bombs. So, yeah, so this has been a tradition in England for a long time, Bonfire Night. It's where Guy Fawkes, or Guido Fawkes, comes from, a real man who really did exist. And you know that film V for Vendetta, or do you know of it?
Yep.
And you know the masks that Anonymous were wearing and all this kind of stuff. Well, that cartoon mask design is based on the archetypical Guido Fawkes, Guy Fawkes, as he's referred to over here. That's what they looked like. They had these large brimmed hats, lots of whiskers, magnificent moustaches all curling up at the corners and all this kind of stuff. And Fawkes is the man who tried to literally, he was one of a team headed up by a guy called Gatesby, blow up the Houses of Parliament. So November the 5th is symbolic of an attempt to destroy Parliament. And so Fawkes, of course, was vilified for this and came down through the centuries as a figure to be rebuked and to be hated and detested. Well, times have changed. And now everybody's beginning to think, even though they don't know it, they're thinking, why didn't Forks get the job done? What went wrong? You know, so it's a they've played it down here. But what do you think? What signals are they sending? Maybe they're sending a signal to you. Look, democracy is going to get blown up. And what are they saying to us? We were losers in 1776 on the 4th of July, and you're going to be losers again at the election. Or am I reading too much into it? And I've lost my marbles. What's going on? But the dates are ridiculous.
Well,
the dates are ridiculous.
They want us to think. Yeah. They want us to think that you were losers on July 4th, 1776, but you really weren't. The City of London still owns, the Crown Corporation still owns, for all intents and purposes, the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the British never left the United States for many, many weeks after the actual conclusion of the war, and we supposedly kicked their butt and all that, but they still hung around. Germany, after the war in Germany, you know about Project Paperclip, you know, all the scientists and the top generals, they just they dispersed to different countries. Germany didn't lose. That was all optics.
Mm-hmm.
So everything that we've ever been told is a lie. Everything.
Well, even Cobalt 60. It could be. Are you finding you get to this point now, you go, I'm going, is any of this true? I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
think. I'm sorry. I used to think that I could trust my mom and dad, but then it turned out that the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus weren't real. Now what do I do? Oh, my God. I want my mommy.
You did it again. Stop that. It's very convincing. It's worrying. Don't do it. Right? You're disturbing the flow. I get all lost. I'm going, is he all right? Catty Seven has put you've put a word in here, Catty Seven, that I can't read properly because it's German. Maybe I can. It's Kasperle Theatre. So is that pronounced Kasperle Theatre or Kasperle Theatre? It must be German. Anyway, the post goes, it's a nice fake choice in the US. You don't say. There is no real democracy. No, this is true. Or maybe there is. Maybe real democracy is supposed to be like this. This really is what democracy is like. We've got this sort of wonderful view of it that's not evident anywhere. It's like a German Kasperle Theatre. I've obviously mulled that. Kasperle Theatre. I can't pronounce it. It's terrible, isn't it? The same dude, she says, or he says, plays the evil sock puppet and the good one at the same time. Yes, got it. Both. The man with his hands up both bottoms of the puppets. Yeah, absolutely. So there we go. Okay. There we go, boy. Yeah, it's a bit savage, is that?
But you to take it there.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
it's like two wings on the same bird. Yeah.
Kasperle is two words. Sorry, it was stuck together. So it's Kasperle Theatre. It's a small sock puppet theatre in Germany. Yes. Okay, cool. Well, we have a similar thing here. We have a thing called a Punch and Judy show over here. You familiar with that, Paul? You ever seen that? It's a very old tradition. It's very vicious.
Yeah.
It's like so there's a puppeteer and he's got his hand in two sock puppets. Actually, they're made up. They're quite horrible looking. And it's about Mr. Punch and his wife, Judy. And in these plays that they do, which as kids we all used to watch, you know, at the seaside, particularly the seaside, Mr. Punch beats the living crap out of Judy with a large wooden stick or shit. They're just knocking 10 bells out of each other in the play. Of course, when you're a child of six, this is just hilarious. It's very, very funny. There's probably something much more subtle to it than that. Maybe there isn't. Maybe it's just a great big violent puppet show to, you know, shock the children. But that's probably closer to democracy than what we've got right now, isn't it? So anyway, what I really wanted to know, Paul, because I know you're quite keen on this sort of thing, is who are you going to be voting for?
Not going to be voting.
No. Really? You're not going to participate in the joys of democracy?
I'm not going to be voting. I'm probably going to cancel and rescind my voter registration because because, you know, and I don't want to belabor the whole national thing, but as a 14th Amendment U.S. citizen, you're actually a citizen of the federal government and considered a resident of Washington, D.C., even though there's only 10 square miles and you don't, and there's no room for everybody in the country. But everybody theoretically is an employee of the federal government, and that's how they can govern you, because they can govern commerce, they can govern entities they created, which mm-hmm. is what a 14th Amendment citizen is. And if you throw off the yoke of the 14th Amendment citizen, you become a state citizen of the original republic. And to be a registered voter and a state citizen, that means you are in rebellion to your state, which is where you would get your rights and to whom you would owe your duties. You know, you got 2 feet on two different sides of the fence. So,
right.
Besides which, if I'm not registered to vote, then they cannot cast a vote for me. Now, if I cast a vote being registered to vote, they can flip the vote with the computers. Mm-hmm. If I register to vote and I don't vote, they can cast a vote in my place, just like they do with all the dead people that have voted in the last 50 years. But if I'm not registered, they cannot use my name to further their agenda. That's kind of where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
And I realized that was not a cornbread version, and I didn't want to belabor the issue, which I ultimately wound up doing anyway, but that was really the only way to explain it without leaving people like hanging.
You've got to belabor it, you know. You do. I mean, it's a great, you know, I don't know if it is the case that if you look at all the systems, democracy is the least worst. It's difficult to actually sort of gauge. I mean, I tend to view it that it's slow burn communism is democracy, because that's what we've now having to endure. You can feel it. So what's the opposite direction?
Well, absolutely.
King? We go for a king, do we? You know?
No. Democracy is mob rule, and it's a gateway to socialism. Socialism is a gateway to communism. The representative republic... A republic is where we want to go, where we've got small local areas that have a representative that actually works for us instead of working to pad their own pockets. That's what we need as a form of government. We need what we had before the bankers started the wars that drove this country into multiple bankruptcies, so the international bankers and the IMF and the Federal Reserve could literally take us by the huevos. Mm-hmm. And send us off to work for nothing.
I mean,
people work in order to just pay your taxes and to pay what, you know, your living expenses and what you need to pay. You have to work like 90% of the week just to pay for the obligations. Life isn't supposed to be like that.
No, it's not.
It's just not.
No, it's not. I mean, one of our great qualities, we get used to everything. It's also a great problem for us. It's like I was saying with the centralization of the globalization of information. It's highly seductive technology because it gives you kind of really quickly what you want. And then you forget that you were doing other things that actually gave you a lot of joy, but you stopped doing them, that kind of stuff. And they've got us by the short and curlies, although we allow it to happen. I mean, really, it does matter what form of government you've got, but it seems to me that every single one that we've had, you see, if you look at, go back to monarchies, there's nothing really fundamentally wrong with it, to quote or paraphrase Aristotle, so long as you get godlike intelligence for kings. I think that's what he wrote. So we go, oh, that's good.
Exactly.
As long as we get godlike intelligence for kings, we can have a monarchy. Well, the same must be also laid at the feet of your representatives. And the question, therefore, is do we get high levels of wisdom and leadership and courage in our so-called leadership class? They're not. They just wish they were, or they claim to be, but they're not leading anybody except up the garden path. We clearly do not get that. There's obviously the fear of the political mob within the political mob is strong enough to keep the political mob as a mob, and they can't do the noble, courageous storytale stuff that we're looking for. That I think we are. I mean, maybe I'm being childish about it. I probably am. But, you know, we look to the... And if you look at all these periods of history and some of the characters we've talked about, certainly on this show, like Napoleon and Mr. Hitler and Caesar and the Tsar in the 1800s, the one that they loved. There's always a story to these people, and of course it always roots back. I tend to think that they're always seeking and have achieved to a small or even a great degree, putting the wealth of the nation at the disposal of the people of it first. They get first dibs. And as Churchill pointed out, Germany's great crime was to deny international finance, that was the phrase he used, I think, or something like that, its share of the profits. Why has it got a share of the profits? Mm-hmm. Why? How has it been able to get it? Well, it's through a sort of entrenched threat and corruption up and down the line for hundreds of years. So there's certain classes of people in charge of the power centers of nations are beholden to this. Their history of the luxurious lifestyles that they've got is because somewhere down the line, one of their ancestors, you know, got bent out of whack, took the money, and was been covering it up ever since. And it's just matured as a disease. What was it? Was it Tolstoy or Solzhenitsyn? Maybe it's Tolstoy who said, behind every great fortune? It might have been fortune. He didn't mean fortune in terms of just acquiring it spontaneously. Behind all great wealth, I'm paraphrasing it, there is a crime. And he's right. You don't get to be a billionaire, right? You just don't. People don't do it. It's not necessary for good life. Why would you even need to do that, you know? So, by the way, quick shout out to I've got to say this, Paul. This is very important. Because we got caught short, we had to switch technical back-end studios. You can't call into the show tonight. Well, you could, but I can't explain it all. It's a little bit more complicated than the other thing. So you're probably not going to join us in the thing here. But also, we don't have any music lined up. How about nothing? Not one song. So, anybody in the chat, we can probably find anything within a matter of milliseconds, can't we, Paul? Usually we can, anyway. It might not be 4:32 this week because we haven't got enough time to knock it together. But if you want to hear something or a song, you know, something old, good, wonderful, beautiful, marvellous, terrible, awful, not too terrible, stick it in the chat, will you, on Rumble, and we'll look it up and we'll get something played. Otherwise, I'll have to pick something out, you know. So you don't want that.
Did we do Stairway to Heaven yet?
Can't do that. It's not allowed. It's not allowed, Paul. We can't do it.
No.
It's not. It's the same thing as the Guitar Shop. You know, it's the one thing that all people all start playing at Guitar Shops. They get lamped, deservedly so. Stop that. I was in Guitar Shops in the 80s, the early 80s, where people would come and play that, and they would get a lot of bad looks for doing that. It was already verboten back then. Okay. So, sorry. I've gone
on. Okay, all right. I'm sending you a parody of and I realize this is sacrilege and blasphemy and all that sort of stuff. But I'm sending you a parody remake of a song. It should be in your Skype right now.
Yes.
You can grab it and let's play that. And then let's do something fun and uplifting or at least truthful. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I could probably play it straight from that, I think, couldn't I? I think I could. Anyway, you can explain yourself and this song afterwards. Okay. How long is this? It's a few minutes, right? Okay. So we're going to take it. Yeah, it's top of the hour. You're here on listening to Paul English Live on WBN 324. We're just coming to the end of hour one. We're going to play a song, and I don't know what it is. Is this dangerous? Am I doing a really stupid thing? I'm probably doing quite a stupid thing, aren't I? So anyway, we're going to play it, and then Paul can explain himself afterwards. Here we go. Hopefully this should... Let me just check to make sure we're picking sound up from Skype. Here we go. Let's see what happens.
By them, did you know that your policies would drive us underwater? By them, did you know that your policies would trans our sons and daughters? Did you know that your policies will punish what is true? The church that you subscribe to does not subscribe to you. Biden, did you know? Did you know that your baby boy made shady deals in Ukraine? Biden, did you know that your baby boy loves Parmesan and cocaine? Did you know that you shouldn't touch these women like sniff that little girl's hair? It's borderline, me too. The war will cease, the debt increase, and the dead will vote again.
Vote again.
The crying will evolve,
the dumb will speak, while we say come.
About inflation, Biden, did you know that your policies would one day ruin the nation? Did you know that your policies make Herod's reign seem bland? One day you'll have to answer to the great I
am. Free Fall Radio.
Attention all listeners, are you seeking uninterrupted access to WBN 324 Talk Radio despite incoming censorship hurdles? Well, it's a breeze. Just grab and download Opera Browser, then type in WBN324.zil. And stay tuned for unfiltered discussions around the clock. That's WBN324.zil.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on the World Broadcasting Network are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of its owners, partners and other hosts or this network. Thank you for listening to WBN 324 Talk Radio.
So you're not voting for Biden then, Paul? I worked that out.
Hey, that would be my guess.
Maybe I could come over and vote for him. Who knows? Yeah.
Yeah, you could. I mean, Democrats will let anybody vote that wants to, whether they're alive or not.
That's the way to win an election. How to win an election the Democrat way. Yeah, they're stretching the...
Let all the dead people vote and import millions upon millions upon millions of illegals and give them all kinds of money every month so they don't have to do anything. And
grumbling about them again.
Yeah. Well, I'm not grumbling. I mean,
you're just stating a fact. Actually, you've reminded me. Let me play this. Let's see if this comes through. This is just listen to this, and then let's see if this comes through.
Did you have to pay a cartel?
Yes.
How much?
Around 10,000.
10,000?
Yes. In fact, the American people is right. Completely true. Who come into this country, they don't know. Okay, I'm good.
Audio's really low.
How if they're not good? How they have killer, psychopath, else? Mm-hmm. No guarantee of that. Why, like no security, no security check? No background check?
No security check, no background check? You're worrying about who's crossing the border?
Yes. They are, of course, me, because I'm like, people are not look normal.
Now, that's really, although that came across as the mad communication that it was meant to, let me just read you the blurb on this. It says, a Turkish man who crossed into Jakumba, CA, I guess that's California, illegally with a group of other Turkish men, told me he paid $10,000 to a cartel and expressed shock at how easy it was to cross the US border with no resistance, telling me that Americans should be worried about security and who is crossing. I found this surreal. It's almost as if he'd come over and found it so easy to come over that he's really worried about everybody else coming over so easily, so he doesn't know whether he really wants to come over there. Do you see what I'm kind of driving at? It's so easy, everybody's piling in. It's not a funny story, but it's obviously mad, part of the madness, you know. And, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no political will to stop this, because there aren't any politicians worth their salt, are there? There aren't any.
No. Well, worth their salt. I would have said it a different way, but then again, I'm American and I'm coarse. You know,
you are American. I've noticed this about you.
Gentleman like yourself.
I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm glad you brought it up. That's good. It saved us all a little bit of awkward embarrassment there later on in the show.
I'm American and I speak my mind, dang it.
This is good. Well, many British people do too. It's just that no one's listening, I guess. You know, no one's listening. I've got another clip. So anyway, look, we've got a general election now on the 4th of July. That's not even, how long is June? 30 days. That's another four. That's 34 days. There's today and tomorrow. It's 36 days, including today. So 35 days is what? 5 weeks? So it's 5 weeks as of yesterday. Is it 5 weeks as of last Wednesday? I think it is. Or maybe it's tomorrow. Is it Friday? I don't know. So that's something for us all to get really excited about. There's literally, as far as I'm aware, very little awareness being generated by it. And of course, we've got to, maybe we need to form a political party right now, everybody, for 5 weeks. Now, you can't vote for it because what would be the point anyway? But purely to try and create some kind of a communications event, some madness or something. I really do need to go and lie down and have a very large gin. My mind's getting carried away with things. But there are things that need to be said and we're never going to hear them. We're never going to hear. Hardly ever are we going to hear the things that need to be said by anybody in the political class. They literally cannot communicate anything that gets close to the truth about anything, because if they do, they're out of a job. And where do we create the platforms to really... I mean, we've got the net. We say we've got the internet. It's true. But by now, I mean, the internet, as I've mentioned here before, you'd be aware of this, is followed the same pattern as all the communication technologies. They start off brilliant. You know, really fantastic. Very, very good. There we go. It's just me generating. And then, slowly but surely, they get acquired. They get consolidated into ever fewer hands. And the fewer hands that do the consolidating tend to not have much of a problem with raising the finance necessary to do the consolidation process. Slowly but surely, inexorably, because funding is made available to them in a more timely and useful fashion by the financial class. And why would it go to certain groups? Because those groups are willing to play ball with the interests of the financial class. And what's their interest? To maintain their control of the financial structures of nations. They don't want anybody else being in charge in them. So they can't have us going around coming up with ideas that invalidate their entire existence, which nearly anything that's alternative to a central bank does. I'm exhausted listening to their great plans to recover the economy. These people, what can you do with them? I don't know what to do with them. It's not that I've got any power. I don't have any force. I haven't got an army in my garden, although I do pray for one regularly. But I haven't got one. And even if I did, that wouldn't resolve it, because it's their thinking is entrenched. It's like concrete. They reckon they're so bright, and they can't look out into the world and see that by their fruit shall ye know them. They must be dense. They can't see that. They go, we created all this, you created none of it. All of this has been created in spite of you. The sweat of good, decent people and their brains is what's created this, not you. They've harnessed it, they've corralled it, they've subdued it. You know, you were talking earlier about the dollar thing. It's this orientation, it's complete madness. There's an abundance of energy, we can make the earth produce so much food. it's yet again, it's this mentality that says, well, somebody's got to be in charge and it's going to be us. And that mentality is the thing that needs to go. That orientation, it seems to me, you know, if we're going to have a new world order, and I'm all for one, by the way, I'm just not for the one that they're sort of their little hobby, their pet project, you know, so yeah, we'll have a new world order, lads, but it ain't going to be yours. We're not having that. That's right. No damn good. You couldn't, you know, you can't, you've never come up with an original idea in your life. They haven't. They don't come up with that. They think they're cunning. Their ways of corralling energy, as I said, you know, and doing certain things, but original. And actually, it's not really originality that we need. It's just a return back to honour and justice amongst people. Oh, I'm talking like a complete lunatic. But it is what we need.
No, you actually, know. You're talking complete truth.
Yeah.
But it's going to take some time. You know, I really don't know if we have time to fix it. Because what happened to let things go so horribly off the rails is they destroyed the education system 50 years ago. So there's two generations, at least two generations, maybe heading on three, you know, prior to graduation, that have learned absolutely nothing that they need to know to be a formidable part of society, to be an adult and to think logically and intelligently with advanced thinking and forethought. We have turned out multiple generations of absolute idiots from the school system. Those are the people that are supposed to be seeing something is wrong and thinking of a way to fix it when they're too busy worried about video games and their smartphone and microwave popcorn in front of the latest Hallmark movie.
Well, I think we can all tell that you're of a certain age, Paul. As am I.
Well, of course.
Of course.
I'm over 60.
Yeah, me too. How did that happen? Believe you me, you're all laughing out there, you 30-year-olds. Not that, maybe there aren't any 30-year-olds again. Well, they took these very old... It'll be upon you like a leopard pouncing out of the jungle. You won't even know what's happened. You go, good grief. This can't be real. This can't be right. Really? Is this the numbers? Absolutely bizarre. Yeah.
Now we know what happened. How do you fix it? The only way to fix it would be to repair what happened to the education system and wait three or four generations to actually turn out people that are worth a damn, and then they will fix it. Do you really think we've got 50 more years? No.
Well, I have. I eat well. I do regular daily exercise. I'm expecting to make 110 quite easy.
I mean, as a globe.
You're right.
As a globe, as a piece of rock.
Yes, I take your point. I mean, my view on it is that it's you know, swings and roundabouts. There are aspects of the education system that were good. They're less good now, in the sense that, look, so why did the great big public school education systems come about here and in your neck of the woods? They came about primarily for the needs of industry. They needed a numerate and literate workforce. It's difficult to sort of do complicated manufacturing actions if nobody knows what 1 + 5 equals or this, that, and the other. And so we adapted to that pretty quickly. We're not, you know, we're inherently, if you're taught well, you can learn just about anything as long as you've got the desire to learn it. So that's how it came about. And it did bring great material wealth. Of course, the profits from that, as always, went into a very select limited number of pockets with all of this kind of stuff. That is what kind of has happened. But you and I grew up in an age where we were surrounded by literate people. Had we been born, I think, probably 200 years ago in England, if you're in the 1800s, most people didn't read and write, I don't think. I mean, I could be exaggerating a bit, but the vast majority of the peasant class, of which I would have been a noble member, no doubt, we wouldn't have known nothing, not never. So things have changed, and literacy changes everything. It's a massive change, because suddenly people are able to think in more fine-tuned thoughts and structures, and you know, numbers, maths, as we say over here. I know you say it, call it math, but we call it maths. being the basis of science. You know, there you are, you've got your two primary branches as we recognize them right now, and off you go. But yeah, certainly the schooling system has been hijacked. Maybe everybody looks back on their education with a kind of fondness or actually maybe not a fondness, but an intensity. It tends to run deep with everybody. I've got bad memories of certain things at school, mainly double chemistry on a Monday afternoon. That's a very, very bad memory. I wish I'd not even said that. It was a detestable hour and 10 minutes that lasted longer than May. This May has lasted. That's how long it was. May, this has gone by like that in comparison to double chemistry on a Monday afternoon with Mr. Coombs. Anyway, it's a bit too much information for everybody. I'm sure you don't care, but you might have had a grindy class at school. That was mine, and I didn't like it. Yet chemistry, I suppose, could be fascinating. Then I'd know it was cobalt 60, wouldn't I, or something like that. But, you know, if you... What are we trying to teach people to do? Yeah, we've all been trained. It's just training systems for centralized. I mean, here in England, the Industrial Revolution is what propelled this nation ahead of everybody else, faster than everybody else, and caused the empire, to come about. Even though I maintain it wasn't British, it was an empire of the Crown or the City of London. They're the ones that, again, you know, got hold of the nervous system, perverted the sort of thinking. Not that we did, it was all bad. It wasn't. We did some good things. I'm not going to sit around and just say we were terrible and evil. Yeah, there was, there were some messes in certain places, and it's not always good, but we did stop slavery, and I'm not here to defend it or what. It was what's happened. And at all ages, we've got terrible things going on right now that nobody wants to look at, and we'll be blamed for it. Those people, they never did anything about that. They knew it was going on. I know. Well, people are kind of like that, aren't they? They don't do stuff, but it's brought us to this point. Here I am talking to you in a split second over, 4,000 miles or something, and you're doing the likewise. There's other people dotted all around the world were able to do this groovy thing that we couldn't do before. Whether it's actually helping us or whether it's just a big, fabulous, elaborate distraction, sometimes I find it hard to tell. I do. I don't know about you.
Back in the early days of society, what did we have? We had needful things. We had the need for tools. We had the need for agriculture. People needed to eat. Somebody had to grow the food, so somebody had to know how to do it. There were service industries that basically built this nation and the rest of the world. Then they got to the point where those skills were no longer necessary because you could actually pay somebody to do what you would have otherwise had to learn how to do for yourself. Mm-hmm. So then you would do other things. You would go to intellectual exploits or intellectual endeavors and scientific and mathematic endeavors. But then we get to the point where the computers are eliminating the need for anybody to know how to use a slide rule or to actually calculate two numbers like in their head or even on a piece of paper. And then the language devolved to the point where communication turned to LOL and emojis. So communication went to hell. So now we've got people that know how to do nothing for themselves. They know how to be distracted, and they've gotten comfortable with not thinking. And the communication system, the language, is so positively rudimentary that it's absolutely infantile. And you know, we're supposed to fix what's wrong with this country or the world? I don't get it. The learning curve is getting wider and wider and longer and longer and... And I just don't think we've got five more decades to put things back together again before the globalists actually push a button and blow us all to bits. I don't see it.
Well, I guess it's a matter. I mean, you're right in a way. If left unchecked, it's going towards the abyss with ever increasing speed. And I think, but I'm on a sort of counterpoint a bit to that. What I tend to think is, irrespective of whatever point in history you may want to pick, you could pick any one. I think there's only ever been, this is just a guess, a relatively small percentage of people, or certainly the minority, there's been a minority that could actually think and or had a desire to think, couldn't stop, found it a compulsion in a way, And you go, well, that's easy. I think about things all the time. But a lot of what we call our unthinking is basically sort of like, you know, a bit of a relay in the head. You know, I'm not thinking too much when I'm making a cup of tea, except, boy, I can't wait to drink it. You know, that's about... but then I think that every morning. But in terms of real thinking, I think it hurts. I think it really hurts us thinking, in the sense that you are willing to put yourself into a place of confusion, usually, I've found that, and going, I don't know about this. Why don't I know about that? Why am I seeing this thing? And I've looked at it 1,000 times. I've never questioned it before. And there's something not right, and I don't know about that. That process, the willingness to do that, it's an attitudinal thing. I don't think it's an intellectual thing. I think the intellect can and is trained. And there are certainly people who are gifted massively intellectually. I've mentioned it here. People, you know, the standout student in the class when it came to maths or something else or chemistry. Somebody just seemed to have a kind of groove for it. And they were flying with it because it was something that they were synced up to more fully than the rest of us at the time. Of course, you feel like a complete dweeb around all that kind of stuff in a way. But I just think, I think it's attitudinal. So if we've got everybody, you know, conforming effectively into a space where, you know, they're doing... I mean, I saw a thing about AI. You know, everybody's banging on about it. I don't even buy into the idea that it exists. I just think it's a lot of computers. But then I am very old. And they were saying, oh, well, it'll be able to write novels and do all this kind of stuff. So what? Who cares? Who's going to read it? Mm-hmm. I think we fit... what's that guy, Noval Harari, that incredibly idiotic creature who just talks about this stuff as if it's absolutely the most amazing thing ever? It's boring. It's really, really dull. Who's interested in all of this twaddlesome, detailed nonsense? They're saying, so they argue, you see, this is to do, I think, with the fact that they're incredibly clever, but thick at the same time. And the thickness comes that they don't seem to be connected to where the full fruits and joy of life lie. They're living in their heads permanently. And, you know, I heard this guy use a phrase ages ago about university professors. Forgot his name now. It's a great speech. He's very funny. And he was saying, he said, have you ever seen university professors? He said, I have. He said, because I used to be one. And he was. I've forgotten his name now. It's a wonderful speech. He's talking about education. And he said, if you ever see them, he said, they tend to view their body as a transport mechanism to get their heads to meetings, which I loved. I loved that. And I thought, it's true. Well, these guys are living in their heads. And they've got a lot of good reason to stay there. They've got paid well. They get a lot of kudos for it. They're classed as intellectuals. They therefore believe that they must be the natural leaders of things. But in fact, what they're doing is the solutions that we've made keep on getting thrown out of the door, because after we've solved a thing, who needs leaders to keep organizing it all? No, we've solved this. Like, the energy problem really could be solved. We know of this. You know, like the guys that get engines to run on water, which absolutely exist. No, they don't, says everybody. Yeah, they do. But then they would just come up with a system for controlling the amount of water you were allowed to put in it. It's that. What is that drive that these people have to control others? What is it that they can't live in a world, as it were, it seems to me, where other people have got free will? It drives them crazy, the idea that you might have it. And I think particularly if you start coming up with better ideas than they have, which is highly likely that you will, because they don't come up with any good ideas. They're just, you know, they're the latest in a long line of people that want to rule more than want to improve the world. They just want to rule it. You know, we talked about architecture here before. Look at the buildings that they allow to be designed and built. They're shocking, and they're miserable, and they reduce the quality. We've got everything that we need. Oh no, you need more money for that. You do not. We don't need that at all. We need to clear up the whole of the monetary system has got to be buried, because it's the disease. It's not. It's a diseased system. It really is. You know.
Among other disease systems that we
have. Are we gone all cerebral and just
a specific example?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. I do know that there are brilliant
more
people,
gin,
but
gin helps
a great number of those brilliant people. great number of those brilliant people were diagnosed as having ADD or ADHD simply because they were so brilliant. They were bored. They were bored and they were disrupting the class. So they had to be dumbed down and drugged to be able to be pigeonholed into the same mindless drivel that everybody else was learning at the time. So even those people that were exceptional, they were throttled. So what good are they? I don't know.
We have to, you know, the it's tricky. We're dealing with spiritual wickedness in high places. You know, when you, I like to look at it at the pragmatic problem level as well. Blokes do. We're doers, right? Or we think as if we're going to do something about a thing. And predominantly, you know, we want to do things. We see that other men have done things in the past that had an effect. We go, we like that. That's the sort of effect that needs to be had. We see where things go wrong. How are we to get these people that are in charge to step down? I keep writing this. I just think, maybe I ought to just try. Dear you lot at Baal, will you just pack it in? Just shut it down, will you? Just stop. Whatever it is that you were thinking of doing tomorrow, don't do it. Because believe you me, it will be crap. Because everything you've ever done is crap. And why not, you know, just see, I know I'm childish. It's so childish what I'm saying. But I can never get into all the political stuff. This is why I find it difficult to get to follow the news cycle too much, personally, because you just look at it and you go, well, I could just watch the news from 1973. I mean, maybe we should start doing that. Why don't we get some old newscasts and just play them? It'll be exactly the same. But the events are different. Doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any difference. Hey, I heard a voice from out there in the hinterlands of the internet. What was that?
Hey. Yeah, it's Patrick here. How are you doing?
Patrick, welcome to the show. How many animals have you just assisted to depart the world? What's going on?
Oh, well, today was factory work, so no animal slaughtering. That was yesterday. I was working on a fence yesterday, making sure it wasn't shorting out.
Yeah?
But, yeah, I've been listening to a lot of World War II era news broadcasts. I think that's well worth looking into and listening to. You know, instead of the modern stuff that we're bombarded with.
You're not an advocate for bringing World War II back. It wasn't for those reasons that you were listening to it. No.
Well, it kind of makes it feel like World War II is back when you do. It's just the mentality of it, how people were rash. You're talking about alternative currencies. They kind of had an alternative currency back then with ration points using stamps and that sort of thing. And for food, you'd trade them in for food. And it was basically like a UBI-type system after the New Deal, Roosevelt, where it's kind of like the Great Reset that we just went through with COVID. It's like you have to come up with trauma so that people run to whatever new alternative there is to whatever form of currency they want to use. But they had stamps, and they would collect them and trade them in for goods. And yeah, kind of like cryptocurrency is today,
I guess. Yeah, it is. I like stamps. Weren't Green Shield stamps a U.S. thing? Didn't you? They came out of the U.S. first, didn't they?
I'm Green not familiar with that. No. What are they?
Well, they were like dividends.
S&H Green Stamps.
What were they, Paul?
Yeah, S&H Green Stamps was the American thing, and you would get so many stamps for everything that you'd buy, and you would stick them into a book, and then when you would fill up a book, it would be worth something, and then you could trade that in for getting yet more stuff.
Right.
So.
Wow.
That was the way it worked.
Yeah, they were a big I remember in the 60s, our house was full of these books. And my mum would say, right, lick all the back of these stamps. So you'd go to the supermarket, which were beginning in the 60s, and as part of their sort of first customer loyalty programs, they would give you Green Shield stamps at the point of sale, depending on how much money you'd just spent with them. And they were just sheets and sheets of these things. And of course, they needed to be licked. You had to lick them and stick them in a Green Shield stamp book. And when you had so many books, you could take them back and get some cheese, I'm being said, or whatever it was, right? It was like a sort of advanced discount coupon system. And maintaining brand loyalty, you know, to the supermarkets that issued Green Shield stamps. They were all over the place. And that was the idea. I guess it's part of the weaning off of the local retailer and into the centralized supermarket program. These things have been running for a long time, you know, to centralize purchases through these mega outlets, which, of course, in the States, you had a lot longer than us. But we've had over here. So I remember that. And my tongue used to get quite dry.
They changed the way people eat, too. The type of food that they would eat, you know, going from animal fats to things like Crisco, vegetable oils, and that sort of things back during those days of the war, where they're rationing things and coming up with all these exotic new ways of making alternative food to keep up with, you know, the poverty people were in.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Everything just seemed okay. I suppose the food off of the farms over here, I am assuming, was considerably less tampered with than it is now. But I'm going to repeat something I said a couple of weeks ago about food, because I'm still watching this series over here called Clarkson's Farm. It's quite interesting. He's sort of like a neophyte into farming. Actually, that's unfair to him. He's been doing it a few years now, and is slowly getting to grips with planting crops and having pigs and having sheep and having cows and goats. They just got some goats in the latest episode, because he's got all these brambles that need eating. But the goats kept thumping him in the family jewels, and he didn't like it. And they do look intelligent. And this woman that turned up, she said, you'll have to get your fencing sorted out. She said, they'll stress test the electric fences. And she was talking about them rolling barrels up so that they can avoid they put a barrel next to the fence, a plastic barrel. Then that, of course, doesn't transmit the electric shock, and they leap and get out that way. Fascinating, really fascinating. But to repeat something I said a couple of weeks ago, he had some guys over who had suggested putting two crops into the same field. It's just worth mentioning these things again. And the result of the conversation was that he said the yield will not be as high. So he was disappointed. He said, oh, well, that's no good. We'll make less money. He said, no, you're going to make more money. He said, because inside 3 years, by the time we get around to the third crop, he said, you won't have to buy any more agrochemicals to put onto this ground. It will be naturally self-fertilizing, because the two crops, one left something in the soil and the other left something else, and it re-nourished and re-energized the soil, he said. And how much do you spend on fertilizer, as it were, you know, agrochemicals for these fields? And it was £100,000 a year. He said, well, you're going to get that back. And he went, ooh. And not only that, they buy the food off them. So this is also a great example of something that's going to be thwarted. So all these solutions have existed. There's just tons of them. I bet this stuff that happened in the 1800s, we're not even aware of. Brilliant stuff. Never got going because it damaged the commercial interests of certain groups. And it's commerce that's the real...
Of course it did.
It's commerce that's the real demon. And, you know, it's hand in glove with government. I mean, literally, it's the hand up the gloved bottom of the government puppets. And all of this for greed and power and money, and they need more money. And you go, why? I don't get it. The food's bad. And so they've separated themselves out from the rest of us in terms of their worldview. They view us now as an enemy, and they're conducting themselves accordingly and treating us as one.
The American Indians have something called the Three Sisters, which is a way of planting corn, beans, and squash, where you have a corn stalk that grows up, and then you have beans that add nitrogen to the soil and climb up the stalk.
Yep.
And then you have the squash, which kind of has large leaf cover that covers the ground that prevents the weeds from growing up. And it all kind of works together. It's very smart.
And it also protects the ground from the ground moisture from evaporating.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. The beans and the nitrogen. I remember that bit. They put beans in. I forgot what the other crop was. And they said, the nitrogen, this is what you need back in there. And they've got all this sort of clever stuff. Well, clever to me, you know, I'm ignorant of it, for measuring certain acidity levels and stuff within and how the crop is growing. It's wonderfully intelligent. And I just thought, well, there we go, you know. So, as we've said before, if there aren't too many problems, what do you need a government for? You don't. So government is involved in generating these problems. It has to. Whether it's doing it consciously or unconsciously, it must provide a continual stream of alarming problems for which it justifies its own existence to solve them, whether they're real or not. And of course, the newspapers are hand in glove with this. So you've got the newspapers, the banks, and the government running this big, you know, good cop, bad cop, intermediate, transgender cop, whatever you want to call it, nonsense. Because they all come out of it. Okay, that's their culture. This is what we do. And I guess going back a few hundred years when the technology was not so advanced, you go, okay, I see that. But it's like a club. It's a thing that's way past its sell-by date. It's massively past it. It's just a thing that's totally surplus to requirements. Of course, they would argue otherwise. And they'd be able to argue very forcefully, I think, because they would be able to create, like I was saying, the reasons, you know, to keep continue to justify their existence. But I find the whole thing, I mean, I'm assuming, I make wrong assumptions. I assume most people here in the UK don't buy into this stuff. And then I meet people that have, you know. Someone's just put a comment. Eric mentioned here, this won't mean anything to you chaps, but Green Shield stamps over here evolved into a chain called Argos, which exists to this day. And they have all these sorts of, it's like a mail order type thing now, or a catalogue company. It's very effective, actually. You can get good stuff from it. I'm not knocking it. But that was the basis for that. So thanks for that tune-up on that, Eric. I'd forgotten that one too, until you put it down there. Yeah, that had come about in that particular way. Yeah?
If I could throw in something about planting, I mean, in some circles, there's the three sisters, but then there's also permaculturists and herbalists that say companion planting is what it is, where you plant two or more plants in the same space, and they support each other, and that eliminates the soil degradation that's caused by chemical fertilizers. And then you also use insect-repelling plants around the field, and then that keeps the bug-type predators away. And basically, you don't have to buy fertilizers. Your soil is better. You don't have to buy the herbicides or the bug killers and all that. Mm-hmm. You don't need genetically modified seed. And your focus turns to growing a quality food and supporting the planet, as opposed to big ags growing quality dollars and constantly working to the bottom line at the cost of the planet. That's where the shift happened.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go back to nurturing the land and growing stuff that's worth eating. And in order to do that, we got to get rid of the big boys. I'm thinking, take away their money. Stop buying their stuff. Stop buying garbage. Buy locally. Buy from local farm markets. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
To fix government, just take the government's money away. Who wants to be a politician if there's no money in it? And who wants to be a politician if there's no authority in it, if they don't get to be the big man on Capitol Hill? You just back out of their system. You just go back to the laws of nature and of nature's God and deal locally. Don't feed the monsters that are global or national. Don't feed them. Don't spend your money and don't listen to the rules, you know, back out of their system so their crud doesn't apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
We can strangle them in those two ways, and then that will unwind government over time.
I think you're right. I think maybe as a process, we just have to adopt one or two behavioral things in line with that, and then adopt another couple and another and not stop. There's no point. So you've got to change everything next week by next Monday. That just can't happen. I mean, I'm getting my eggs locally from a local farmer now, courtesy of good friends who bring me 3 dozen eggs every couple of weeks, and they're so yellow, and this is good. So that's a start. I know it's tiny, but it yet again, it's coming back to this attitudinal shift. You go, this is what I'm about. This is what we need to be about. We have to concentrate in this particular way and focus on these things. I mean, I don't know whether focusing on the big issues is a distraction or not. I can't help it with regards to the banking thing and probably the immigration thing. They're just unavoidably massive problems, which they have intentionally placed into our space to keep us. And you really look at it and you go, why? What are you doing? That's why I don't go, really? Why? So dumb. Do you know how much fun we could have if you could just get off this power shtick? You know what we could do? We could do so much. Oh, no, we're doing loads already. No, you're not. You're doing nothing. Just mucking about with stuff and coming up with AI things and, you know, creating stuff. When they say things like, oh, we've got these machines and nobody will have a job, and we won't need people anymore, you go, you're missing the whole point. We want we love people. It's just their entire attitude is weird. It's because they become so distanced from the core, from the fun of life. It's not mentioned much, but I remember life being, you know, yes, I've always griped about things. We all do, right? But there used to be more moments of fun. And you can look back on all those moments of fun and you go, oh, wasn't I an idiot at the time? You can always disparage what you were doing at the time naively. But naivety is a wonderful thing. It really is. It takes you into spaces you wouldn't normally go, and you suddenly get a shock, and you go, oh, bloody hell, what an idiot. And it's funny in retrospect. Often, as long as you don't come to serious harm, of course, we don't wish that on anybody. I know some people make some very stupid mistakes, and maybe we've all done that from time to time. But, you know, just that openness about life, and we can see everything basically going the same old route as all the communist routes have taken before. The chewing up of the family, the miserableness in the streets is increasing incrementally, you know. And we've been studied very well. And the sort of connective glue that holds us together, they've poured acid on it at every point to sort of fray the whole work and to bring in this kind of stupidity everywhere. But that's me being hyper-negative about it. I'm also positive in that there are always people being born who go down to the potting shed in the garden and come out and have created a hovercraft. You know, they just created something amazing. Oh, no, I've done this. That's going to change everything. It's implementing it. It's not that we haven't got the solutions. It's applying them. That seems to be the problem. It's the application of them into the real world meets with all this resistance from those who don't want you to apply them, because their position of authority is threatened, and it's not an easy problem to solve. It's major, because they devote and then, as we know, bring all their energies and resources to bear to quash anything that might unsettle their perceived view of their, you know, role in the great hierarchy of human life, or whatever they think of it as. You know,
I'm all for simplicity.
You wanted your own hovercraft as a kid, didn't you?
You wanted one. What are you all for, Patrick? Sorry, we're talking
about my own hovercraft.
Did you? Did you get one? You never got one, did you?
I
designed one.
Yeah.
I'm for going back to simplicity and not complicating life more than you need to. Thinking about all the things that you might have but don't have. Just the things like simple gardening, for instance, like we were talking about.
Yeah, you know,
planting cover crops and having a victory garden, so to speak. Like simple things like growing garlic, like when to plant it, how to pick it, what, you know.
Do you want to start a gardening show? Come on.
Yeah, we should. That's in the finest British tradition.
It is, really. The gardening radio shows were it. They were hugely listened to, particularly when they read out letters. Oh, Mrs. So-and-so's been trying to grow turnips, you know, and what do you think? There's a guy over here with a great called Percy Thrower. That was his name, Percy Thrower. And he was a legend in the world of TV and radio gardening. And my mum and dad were really into it. Of course, I'm 14 and honestly, gardening, forget it. forget it. What's that got to do with life? I've got to listen to records and get some jeans and get on my skateboard and stuff like that. But they were, yeah, Percy Thrower. English people will know who I mean. Have you got any sort of guys in the States on radio? Is there a tradition of great gardening shows on American radio stations?
None that I can think of.
Wow.
Not really.
Maybe it's an English thing. Maybe it came out from the war, you know, because you were talking about the war there as well. But there was a lot about grow for victory, you know, and everybody was growing vegetables and things to feed ourselves and stuff. And, you know, that could easily be done again, but they don't want that.
Well, they don't want I went to Russia and, you know, I talking to people there when the communist system collapsed in the 90s, you had to depend on your own garden to feed yourself and your family and raise animals and that sort of thing. So it's quite a big deal over there still to have a huge garden, have rabbits and animals, goats, sheep, animal chickens, all the normal stuff, and just be able to stow away canned food for the winter time, put it in the root cellar, and then haul it out when you need to use it. And I'm not going to say it's a lost art, but not many people do it, you know, unless they're some sort of religious people or just like have a discipline to do it.
Well, I guess needs must, Patrick. I would have thought, you know, it's not a nice way to learn it, but if the pressure comes on and things go as bad as all the doom mongers want us to believe, and, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it may go that way, even though I'm sure none of us want to dwell on it because it's
just... That kind of takes the joy out of it, though, the whole doom thing.
Yeah, it does.
When you're just rushing to prepare and stowing away food but never using it, never enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes the pleasure out of it. It just like becomes work and... Yeah, it's not fulfilling. I know this from, you know, people around me, you know, putting away MREs, military meals ready to eat, vacuum sealed the last 25 years. It's like, when are you going to ever eat that? Really? You can have tons of that stuff. It's like, everybody's preparing for doomsday and it never comes. And
yeah, don't think it's a good behavioral thing. We know what do we want? No. We want an out in the open, really buoyant, fantastic food industry. So that's what we want. We want that. We don't want to. People, you know, I guess in America, the culture of prepping kind of makes sense. I can see how it would come about, but you're talking about a vast territory by English standards. It's just colossal, right? There's huge parts of it. There's nobody in it. You could, if you get organized, probably weather out all sorts of horrific civilizational storms. We can't here. It's impossible. It just wouldn't happen. You know, I've said, well, what would be the point of me storing a lot of food? I said, word would get around that we're looking quite fat and plump after 2 or 3 weeks and everybody else is starving, and then I'd be dead. That's what would happen, because everybody's so near to one another that you would literally get the most atrocious behavior. And I keep thinking that maybe, you know, our governments are under threats of that. This sort of insidious control of the reliance system that's been set up. This is why the European Union, as it were, and all these unions tend to go to dog poo. They don't work because the sort of interdependence that is created creates these pressure points for being manipulated, and that there's a lot of that. So everything, you know, most of the things that we're looking at seem to be driving us in the direction of getting local again. And yet I know in myself, what with my upbringing and all that, I'm sort of resistant to it. I understand it intellectually. In fact, it's more than intellectually. It makes complete sense to do it. I think the main thing is to just start meeting up with people and build up a ball of human energy with them. That's the most important thing. Whatever it is, just to start connecting again, even if it's at folk dances or whatever, or selling honey and all these health things. You know, I need to get out and go to more of these things because the people that you meet there are just generally pretty good types. They're all constructive. They're doing proper things. I've got some trees to take down in my garden. I want to grow a plant that would attract bees. I've been told that lobelia, see, I'm turning this into a gardening show now, that lobelia would be a good thing to grow because the bees love it. And then we could have lots of honey, and honey is a jolly good thing in all sorts of ways. It's kind of symbol of I don't know, abundance, I always think honey is. And the bee is just an amazing little pal. And I saw these terrible things. I don't know if you saw the other day of them burning bees in Australia because the government of wage. It's all mad. And is that true? I don't know. Maybe it's partly true for that news story. It's just to keep sending out these shockwaves that you're living in a lunatic asylum. I think that's part of what they're seeking to achieve with us. They're doing a good job, of course, but, you know.
Isn't lobelia an alternative to nicotine plants? Like... Is like it? The green tomatoes and the tobacco and stuff. I think lobelia extract also plugs up the nicotine receptors that the spike proteins grab onto. But that would be a really good thing to grow in your garden. It'd be good for the bees, and you could make a lobelia tea and protect yourself that way as well.
Yeah, no, I've got to sort of, I want to take all the sort of, I've got these Leylandis, they're absolutely colossal. And I just realized, I mean, when we first moved here, we had to take one down almost immediately because it was taking the wall down. It was vast, this thing. And they've all grown through the telephone cables again because I've not been up for a few years. There's nothing quite like a 60-year-old man hopping around trees with a chainsaw. It's quite fun, you know, and alarming to everybody. Are you all right up there, Paul? Yeah. Oh, no, there goes my leg. No, it's not that bad. I know what I'm doing, you know, but it's quite hard work up there getting covered in bird do and everything and all that kind of stuff. But the idea was to take all the greenery off and kill them so they don't grow anymore and then grow something that would grow in between them that would produce all these flowers in due course, like a big hedge that birds could then, you know, nest in a few years' time after the foliage had built up, and that the bees would love. And I'd love, there's a thing called a flow hive. Have you ever seen it? Created by, I think it was these Australian guys. They redesigned a beehive so that you don't have to take all the slats with all the wax cells that the actual hive, but you don't have to take it out. It's literally got a tap on it, like at the bottom of a barrel. You throw this switch and they all the combs slide. They just adjust in one direction by like an eighth of an inch, and it cracks all the honeycomb cells, and the honey just pours out like on tap. It's amazing. And the other thing about it was that they said, although I'm sure there'll be some negative reviews somewhere, but to me, a neophyte looking at it, I went, wow, that is such a great thing. And they were saying that they kill no bees this way. They don't have to go in and be invasive into the hive. They can just crack these cells open and away they go. So, yeah, I don't know what we're like here. I mean, we're not far from too much countryside, and I don't know how far bees fly. And maybe we need a bee show. Maybe everybody's gripped by this. Look, forget about the bees. What about the central banking? Yeah, well, they are big bees, aren't they, anyway? But, of course, the baddies use bees, don't they? As a bit of... they view themselves as in charge of the hive, and we are the big worker drones. I know they're that, but they're still an admirable creature, is the bee. They really are. They're absolutely brilliant. I'm always helping them out. Whenever I see a little tired one, apparently you're supposed to go and give it a bit of honey, and you can kickstart it back to life. So I'm told. I do it. Don't know if I've ever been successful. But there we go.
Okay, I think I have an answer.
Do you?
Lobelia inflata, Indian tobacco, contains the alkaloid lobeline, an efficient expectorant. Although it has a long history of use in asthma, it does promote bronchoconstrictive. Okay, except the damn cookies. Give me my screen back. Bronchoconstriction and a respiratory stimulant in vitro. This appears to suggest that cholinergic effect in the respiratory system. It also binds to nicotine acetylcholine receptors in the ganglions, thus promoting the release of epinephrine and norepinephrine. It is this action on adrenal hormone secretion that is responsible for lobelia's therapeutic effects. Lobelia has traditionally been used in combination with other botanical agents such as capsicum frateisens and Symphlocorpus factida, whatever that is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, lobeline and lobelia are substitutes for nicotine, and it can be used to aid in nicotine withdrawal, like with smoking cessation and plugging up the nicotine receptors to keep the spike proteins away from you and all that.
Yeah.
Plus, it also has additional benefits. So I'm thinking you should grow it. It'll be good for the bees. And yep. You and the wife have a cup of tea every day. It'll be good for what else? Yeah. Do it.
It would. Go yeah. Ahead. Oh, well, okay. I'll do it. We'll get going with the honey. Honey. Yeah.
There you go.
There we go. Fantastic. Of course, I'm on loads of nicotine as it is. I don't smoke, but I do take nicotine. It's amazing. So anybody out there that's aware of the healing powers of nicotine, we should probably do a nicotine show at some point, all about it. And Dr. Brian Ardis and his great work. And if you're not familiar with it, look him up. Brian Ardis, BryanArdis. He's out of Texas. And he discovered what I believe to be and has posited the accurate take on what the COVID debacle was all about. Not bats, snakes, not snake venom is part of the issue. It's also in the so-called, crap jabs and all that kind of stuff. And maybe we're all sat here still bracing, waiting for the great onslaught of that horrific event. And it's, it's unfortunate that so many people fell for it. In my view, they probably think that we fell for something else by not getting jabbed. I'm assuming most people here aren't jabbed. Who knows? If I've stepped on your toes, tough. That's life. I don't know what's going on.
What gets me about that was when they shut down the churches.
Yeah.
I agree with you about what you were talking about and parish on the parish level of getting together with like-minded people in your parish. I kind of do a Bible study every Wednesday with my neighbor who goes to my parish church.
Right.
And just the amount of communication you end up doing, and you just talk about what's going on. You talk about what's going on in your life and the things you're doing, and you get input from them, and they might have, it's a way to trade goods. They might have an excess of their garden, and they, it's a way to do that without having to handle money.
Yeah.
And you get to socialize instead of sitting in front of a screen and talk and just, say what's on your mind and then look at the Bible and see what's happened before and kind of judge your circumstances based on that. And yeah, it's good. And if you could do like a radio where you communicate with other people, I mean, you can do things online too. And I think that's what we need. We need more of that.
So yeah, that I think we do. It's definitely happening. It's whether I suppose, this thing about being part of the mainstream of life is a, what was the word? Is it a compulsion? We're hardwired to do it. It's very strong. You think, well, why should I have to go off and do all this stuff? Can't they just sort things out properly? For all of us. Of course, I'm living in La La Land when I say something like that. And everybody's had a right, I guess, throughout history to moan about the government. But the current situation, certainly ever since this century started with 9/11, is of a totally different order. It's taken a long time for certain people to see it, but many people were on it, very fast, that they'd moved into a different gear and are literally waging war on the people that apparently elect them, in all these particular and different ways, which they are doing. And anyway, the only good news that are on the horizon, I think, or one of the good things, is that we're going to have a new government on July the 4th, and it'll all be much, much better then. It's going to be, and you're going to get one on November the 5th. So all these problems that we're talking about, they'll all be sorted out if we just put a new government in, because that's always worked in the past, hasn't it? Oh, hasn't it?
If voting mattered, they wouldn't let you do it.
I know.
Well, governments are cults.
Yeah.
Think about that.
What did you say? What did you call them? What was that word you used? there they are. They're definitely, they're
New Age cults.
They are. They're definitely New Age cults. Of course, I'm not expecting to hear a word of intelligence about the banking system at all from any of the candidates ever. Never. All they're going to talk about is the immediate economic issues. They're not going to talk about the solution, which is, here's the solution. This is what we do. We forgive all the debts and we turn the banking system over to direct ownership of the people of Britain. And
have a jubilee.
Yeah, and we have a debt jubilee, and the private banks will be just closed down over a 5 to 10 year period. Everything will be subsumed into one bank, which you're all going to own, and away you go. You know, that's kind of it. That's what we're going to do. So that no one's going to say that. What a pity. No one's going to say that at all, possibly because they don't even know that that is the solution, because it is the solution, you know. It is. So anyway. Hey, you know what? We're near the end of the show. We're near the end of the show. And because we are technically challenged a bit this week with a new studio, there won't be an after show. We're gonna knock this right on the head here at the end. So thanks for joining us for the past couple of hours. I've been joined by the inimitable Paul B, and Patrick C has been with us for the last 45 minutes or so. Patrick, it's been great to have you along. And we'll be welcoming you back again pretty soon. Any final words, Paul? We've got a minute, just under a minute to go. No.
Think globally, act locally. Come on, let's go back to the old standby that they were giving us 30, 40, and 50 years ago. Think globally, act locally.
I think so. I think that's the way to go. Everybody out there, have a cracking week. I'll be back next Thursday here on WBN 324. I don't know who's coming up after me. I ought to check and look at these things, but someone's coming up after me here on the station. We'll be back. We'll see you real soon. Back next week. Bye for now, everyone.